Welcome to the BFM Historical Society. This week, we talk to Mikey Havoc, a man whose voice most of you wake up to every morning. Mikey explains how, of all the fun, cool stuff that he's ever got to do, and there's been a lot, breakfast radio is still the best buzz. Welcome to the BFM Historical Society, Mikey Havoc.
Hello, Dubhead, and hello, listeners. Good morning.
Now then, I'd like you to cast your mind way, way back and tell me when it was that you first got involved in BFM and how that all came about.
I consider myself a fairly late starter with the whole BFM thing because my interest in this sort of music, the BFM style sort of music, came about from working in record shops, which is what I did straight after school. Amongst the working at record shops time, I achieved a measure of success with this with the band Push Push that I was in. And we toured around the country and in Australia and stuff. And remember thinking at the time, well, everybody that works in radio are dicks. Never wanted anything to do with radio whatsoever. That changed when I came up here to BFM to make an ad for a gig that we were doing at Attica, which was a club run by a friend of mine who then became a girlfriend, Vicky, down on Fanshawe Street, which was really the first sort of, for want of a better term, grunge club before there was even a term for it. About the same time that we went out to play there, I sort of came up here to make the ad. Thought this was good fun. Came out, made another couple of ads, hung out, met a few of the people up here, and just sort of thought, that's a good radio station. Those guys aren't dicks at all. They're weird, but they're into the same music that I'm into, and yeah, and I started DJing up at Attica, and I think about the same time as I sort of said, can I have a little of a go up here? And I did the first show that I did on BFM was a show called Be By Candlelight. It was what we used to have their Wednesday special, and we sort of got 2 hours to do whatever you wanted, and sometimes it was an album, sometimes it was a genre of music, and I wanted to do some really good, really mellow sort of, fairly out of it sort of, you know, just... I guess it was for just super chilling out, which was quite weird when I look back on that being the first show that I did. It was great, and it was all stuff like Jeff Buckley and Massive Attack and Smashing Pumpkins and some of the more beautiful side of where all those bands were coming from, Nine Inch Nails and all that sort of stuff, and all just one big long mix for 2 hours. So
when was that? What year would that have
been? 1995. 1990, maybe 1993. Shit. Yeah. Am I cracking? I might be cracking 20 years.
And you think you're a Johnny Come Lately.
Graham Hill was a program director, and he basically said to me out of the blue one day, hey, Marcus is leaving breakfast. Do you want to do breakfast? And I went, pardon me? What? And I don't really get why he did that. And I'm pretty sure that I wasn't ready at the time for that. But I went in there with a lot of gusto and sort of tried to do... I must have been doing some drives before then. I think I did Wednesday as well. Wednesday and Friday drives. But Friday was the one where every single bit of energy I had for the week went... And I did breakfast for a while, but then I went back to doing drive. And the first breakfast go was short-lived because then Graham took over and did breakfast for like a year and a bit. And then after a year or so, Graham asked me to do it again. And, you know, Graham was a great person to have in charge at the time, and Graham moved on, and Bill Curtin, the mighty Bill Curtin, big, hefty Bill Curtin, eyes like spades, hands like coals, walk with a limp, but a hell of a nice fellow, was program director, and we sort of got stuck in that rut for a good 15 years.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I was sort of in the process of running bars and stuff then. I had Squid Bar, and I was putting a lot of passion and effort into that, but at the same time was equally as excited by the radio, and probably burned myself out, which I guess will come around to me in about 10 years. I'll probably just stop. To this day, I still do that, though. I still challenge myself in that respect and go, what are you doing, man? This isn't what you're supposed to do. Get some sleep, you know? But it was awesome, man. It was like, it just felt right. I've never really felt like I think most people that work up here have never really felt 100% that I fitted in with everybody, but I think that's the point. You know, you realise after about 10 years, oh, hang on, no one feels that way. For me, it was really exciting to be able to sort of to find the music and to champion the music. I didn't want to do what Marcus was doing. I didn't want to do what Graham was doing. So, yeah, especially looking back at it now, we're three completely different broadcasters. But I think Auckland was changing too. I think Auckland was turning, you know, and I'd learnt that from being in the club part of it and the performer part of it, and even doing a wee bit of TV at that time as well. And just finding that Auckland itself was wanting was becoming a much more a richer city, and it was prepared being much more open-minded, much more needed to get over itself a wee bit, and actually just start singing a few songs.
I guess at some point you had to stop doing the night work though.
Because of because the TV thing started sort of beckoning. Plus, it was doing my head in a wee bit. The drinking thing did my head in a wee bit. You know, the people being drunk, being in charge of people's drinks did my head in a wee bit. But it was hard because you sort of feel when you're running something like that and it is successful and it is, people are enjoying it that much and it is becoming so much a part of so many people's weekend. You feel responsible. So I sort of realised that I had to get out of it at some stage. And we were the freak generation, man. And we were the last generation to really just go for it. And I see the music scene and the counterculture scene now is quite cloistered. But maybe that's just me. Maybe that just comes from having a few cheap sex parties and listening to Jane's Addiction when I was that age. My love of Jane's Addiction, the greatest rock band in the world. I can remember listening to them back when I was in Push Push years and years and years ago and just going, wow, this is just at last the band that ticks all the boxes. And who would have thought that not only have I had the chance, thanks to BFM and to TV stuff, to not only interview Jane's Addiction, but to see them headline the big day out recently. And to play didgeridoo with Porno for Pyros, which was just so rad. And it's really cool when a band that I never even thought I'd see live, or let alone put out another album. Not only did they put out lots more albums, but but now the whole world knows about them. That's cool, man. But anyway, so should we play some Jane's Addiction? This is the song that blew my mind when I first heard it, and amazes me that so many people love it now. But good on you all, Jane's Addiction. Jane says.
I'm
if you can get through the, you can walk the pit of fire that is BFM for long enough and do stuff that people talk about, then you've done more than most people that come out of journalism school or broadcasting school are ever going to do, you know? Yeah. And I don't mean that in a wanky way. I mean that in a, it is hands-on, you know, like the rewards can come rather thinly sometimes, but you know, you're in a position here where you can do stuff to, like, I've done stuff that I could never have done if I'd been a proper journalist. You know, I've been able to tackle subjects, I've been able to go head-to-head on things, I've been able to cause shit, I've been able to speak to the Prime Minister, I've been able to argue with the Prime Minister, I've been able to argue with the opposition, I've been able to throw out an opinion, that which is my opinion and mine alone, and see what happens with it, and watch things happen around that, which you don't get to do when you're a journalist. You just get to follow the pad and whatever the boss asks you to do, you know? You know, me and Helen Clark had a coffee in Kingsland. What about that? And we talked, and this is before, this is why she was still leader of the opposition. And I thought it was really cool that she even bothered, because I asked her, I said to her, look, I'd like to talk to you and see if there's anything that you want, that I can help you with, because I think, you know, I think you've got a good chance of winning this. I know a lot about the youth market, it would appear. So, you know, let me sound, bounce a few things off me. And it was awesome. And ever since that day, there has been that connection. You know, she's a Prime Minister. Second question she ever got asked when she got made Prime Minister was, will you still be doing your weekly chat with Mikey Havoc on BFM? You know, it's like, what do you mean? And I'm in her biography. How about that? And it's cool. I think it set a benchmark that I think obviously John Key has a hard time trying to keep up with. But it's something too. You can get very complacent about. You can get very sort of, oh, Prime Minister tomorrow morning. People go, excuse me, what? You know, overseas DJs are classic. You know, you what? You're talking to the Prime Minister and you're still up? What? Go to bed. I think next I'd like to play the song by a young bunch of scallywags called Rage Against the Machine. I remember getting the CD from my friend Mike Bradshaw when he came back from the Sony conference, and he gave me the CD, and I'm not sure if I was the first person to play it on the radio, but I was definitely the first person to play it out at a club. And we used to play this like when the Team Policing came into Attica. Oh, boom! And this was a long time ago, man. So we're talking like as we said, like 1993 or 1993, 1993 for Rage Against the Machine, when their album came out. And I just know that I was like one of the first, I think Hans, who also was on BFM, played it on the radio first. And then I played it out at Attica, and then it was all on. And to sit there a few years ago at the Big Day Out, looking around me and watching hairdressers, plumbers, construction workers, goths, old people, young people, families all going, fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. It was just awesome. Call me an old fuddy-duddy, but that shit just floated my boat, man. And I just looked at it and I thought, hey, look what 45,000 people want to do this Friday night. They want to sing that. And I thought, hasn't that done well, that song?
Now you do what they told you. And now you do what they told you. And now you do what they told you. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Killing in the name of. You do what they told you. And now 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 you do what they told you. Now you do what they told you.
BFM struggles with the fact that on paper we have this many listeners, even though I lie about that all the time. I don't think it's so much how many people are listening, I think it's who's listening. And that sounds elitist and superior, but it is. The opinion makers and the opinion leaders, the people who are going to change this country, aren't listening to More FM, man. We've either got a heads up our asses or not. Prove me different. Prove me wrong. You know, it's not like, but the people that are making great movies in this country didn't grow up listening to Easy Listening Eye. We have time to talk about stuff. If something's worth giving another couple of minutes, we'll shunt the ads down a wee bit because we can, because we're allowed to, because it's not 1ZB. We'll shunt them down and we'll get to the bottom of it and we'll dig a bit deeper and you'll get one of my favourite interviews ever was Stephen Gray interviewing Turiana Turia. And I won't go into what it was about, but it was just he just pushed her and pushed her to the point where the line that she was just delivering suddenly fell to pieces because he just kept going, well, hang on, do you mean this? Well, hang on. And because she's expecting him to go, okay, well, thanks very much for talking to us, Minister, and blah, blah, blah. And I think on BFM you will hear some of the worst radio. You're guaranteed to hear the worst, shittest radio you'll ever hear. But then stick with it because you will hear the best radio you've ever heard, ever, in the world. In the world. I can remember interviewing some guy who was from US Armed Forces Radio who was Snowden. Do you remember that? And he was snowed in up in Greenland and had found BFM on the net. And then we're talking to him live and I'm playing She Had Home again. It's sweltering hot. I remember like shorts and jandals in the studio, or maybe shirt off even. Nah. But then, and there's Snowden in Greenland having this conversation with a guy who's talking about, hey, from US Armed Forces Radio, who's talking about how our SAS troops are stationed up there. It's like, oh, we're not supposed to know that. Oh, oh. And then next day, Helen Clark comes out and tells the country that they are. Shit, that's awesome, eh? You know? So this is a song that I first used to play when I first started getting gleaning onto dance music, which was sort of quite early on in the piece. Thanks to people like Gideon and Luke the Spook, cheers bros, for a really getting into it. And we used to play this one, especially up at Squid, when I'd blow the speakers almost every time, go and fix them with cigarette paper like MacGyver, and then just bust it out again. And it was like the first really big, tweaky, noisy song like this that came out at the time. And I remember playing it on BFM, and people just coming and go, "What the fuck is this, man? What are you doing?" But into it, and see what happened after that, eh? And then I'm not even going to mention that. Not even mention the two big BFMers who said to me, "Ah, that music will be dead in a year." Bob.
have got into trouble.
Sanitarium,
yes,
you mean?
Exactly.
Yes, it was. We did. We did a story many years ago on the dangers of soy. We did one. I spoke to a scientist called Dr. Mike Fitzpatrick, who was a very, very cool guy and is a very cool guy. He's telling us about how he got fired from all these jobs because he's a food technologist and scientist, and he kept getting these jobs where he had to sort of talk about the benefits of soy. And he said, well, there's bad stuff happening. And after we spoke to him, I went on the net and tried to find the dangers of soy and just kept coming up against brick walls, which in itself is suspicious enough. So we got him on the radio one day and we started talking about it. And we had one Monday radio show about it. We talked about that and for the only time ever since before, we finished the one Monday morning breakfast show on 95 BFM in Auckland City on the frequency modulator, 95, and had five PR companies demanding transcripts of the show. Oh, yep. And the Sanitarium tried to sue me for it. About the same time as they were trying to sue me, I was happened to be at TVNZ and wandered into the green room one morning when they were doing Good Morning or whatever one of the shows was there. And they had someone talking about the benefits of cooking with soy. And I said, oh, where are you from? And they said, oh, from the Soy Marketing Board. And I went, the what? The what? And basically busted them as being a cloak company of sanitariums at the time. Basically, they had this, they really wanted to kick our asses on it, and it was going to cripple the station if they'd gone through, and it caused me a lot of trouble. And there's a lot of meetings with Suzanne, the then station manager. At the very last minute, we went, okay, sure, we'll give you the 3 days write a reply, and I'll quit my job, and I'll get fired, and the station will give you this much money, as long as you can prove that this, this, and this, these three things to your consumers. If you can promise to your consumers that those things aren't true, then sweet as. And never heard another word from them. And funnily enough, I met the guy who was the PR guy of Sanitarium many years later in a totally different role, and it was very interesting to get his side of it as well. He was the only one who said, don't, well, we shouldn't mess with them, they're BFM, we shouldn't, they can say whatever they want, they can actually tell the truth. If I'd been wrong, you know, it was interesting to say with the meningitis vaccine too, you know, coming out and saying stuff about that was to my detriment initially. No. And there were people yelling at me about not being a parent and not knowing about it. But the stuff we do, you know, we don't take it lightly. And as much as we can say whatever we want, we're just as vulnerable to someone ringing up and going, dickhead, straight away, you know. So we are a bit careful about it. But it was, you know, there's been quite a few situations like that where we've, you know, stuck to our guns, and I think rightly so, you know.
Mm.
Because that's what we're about, you know. We do something terrible. Well, it's nice to admit it was terrible, you know, but do some beauty stuff as well. Put some good bands on.
What's he building in there? What the hell is he building in there?
Now then, for a little while, you took a break from breakfast. When was that, and what happened? What did you do?
I think, well, it sort of got to a point where it was sort of financially not really working for me, and you know, I felt like maybe I'd been here a bit long and a bit, three times more than anyone else had done it. It just felt like it was time to sort of focus on some other stuff, and I think I did the right thing, you know, at the time, and went away and but kept doing like a Saturday morning show, and then turned into a come back and not just doing Saturday mornings, come back and doing like weekday mornings, sort of from 10 to 12. Trailer with the Cage. Which was, that was great fun. I really liked that show. There's no rules for 10 till 12 on a Saturday. Shit. Help yourself. You know, I suppose I got married then. Did I get married then?
Yeah, and you also did some theatre, I believe.
I did do the Rocky Horror Show, which was really cool fun. I did 3 months of that, and I got to play Meatloaf's part. But it was cool fun, man. It was cool. I got to hang out. I got to meet some lovely people there, and theatre's awesome. You know, I'd love to do a bit more of that, but yeah, see what happens. And it was just, you know, after, I guess it was a good thing to do, you know, because, and amazing to do a show like that too, where it means so much to so many people. For so many people, this is what I figured out, for so many people, you know, I mean, I've done a few groovy things and freaky things in my time, you know, but for so many people, the fact that they're into the Rocky Horror Show, that is the most freaky thing that they're into, that they've ever done, and it's a big deal, you know, and so good on them. For them, busting out the time warp and chucking on the fishnets is the epitome of loose. Loose! And that was really good fun. That was really good fun doing that. And then that went to weekdays, and then that went to drive. And then out of the blue, got asked to do breakfast again under a storm of controversy.
Oh, well,
suddenly all my best mates weren't my best mates, but, you know. No, there was an outcry. There was a, oh my God, I can't believe that this is happening. I haven't been asked to go back to breakfast, and I hadn't actually been asked to go back to breakfast by that stage.
That's ridiculous.
It was inferred to me, but a couple of ex BFM stalwarts really took offence to it and really went to town to try and fuck me over, which I to this day find really quite unbelievable that people would go to such, you know, because at the end of the day, I really like doing radio and I want it to be the job that I do, you know. And so do you mind, you know, I appreciate you might not be into it, man, but it's also my career that you might be fucking with, you fucker. Aesthetic little gimp, you know. I get why a lot of people were really upset about it, and a lot of people really made a big fucking deal about it, because Wallace obviously was breakfast host at the time, and he had a lot of fans, and I was one of his fans, you know. But he sort of reacted in a way that surprised me. And the massive backlash to the idea was from a lot of people who, I've got my own reasons why I think they did it, why people said what they said. But, you know, maybe it's because you never got it when you thought you were going to get it, Damien. Oh! One day though, mate. One day. You cock. You know, it was hardcore, man. There was a lot of people bad mouthing the idea because it is supposed to be training ground and it is supposed to be, you know. But it was, and so I just went, well, hang on, do you want to do that? And I went, you know, I still really love the music. I still love the place. I still think I can do a good show. So I just shut the fuck up for three or 4 weeks, and didn't do anything until I did my first show. And then back on breakfast. And then whoop, there's the ratings went whoop and whoop, whoop, and everyone was happy and that's up. And I'm sure it's not to everybody's taste, but you know, sucked in. Yeah. It was the most hate that I've ever felt through my career of anything I've ever done, and it was really weird that it came from BFM listeners. I took it a bit personally because I felt that it was like from BFM listeners who I've tried my hardest to do the job for that many years beforehand. And I thought, you know, you could at least show a bit of respect for that. And some people didn't, some people didn't. And yeah, but hey, here we are. Mm. And you know, of all the people, the first text message that I got on the day, Stinky Jim. And those of you that work at BFM will go, really? You know, it's what I do realise about breakfast, and what I've always realised about breakfast, it's a very intimate time of the day. For people to let you into their lives and to want you to be part of their morning is quite, you know, I don't do it I don't even remember what it would be not listening to breakfast radio anymore because I've been doing it for so long. But you know what I mean? I know how much it means to some people, and some people it can twist their whole day in a good or a bad direction, and I'm very conscious of that, and I think that the listeners realise that. Those people do listen, you know, I think it's that they listen for that reason, you know, and I'd like to think that I think texting killed phone calls on this radio station for a long time. I think text the DJ, get fucked, give him a call, you know. he'd appreciate it a lot more. I got to interview Jeff Buckley on BFM, and I remember when he came up here, everybody was like, oh, Jeff Buckley, and there was a poster of him that everyone had doodled all over and drew cocks coming out of his mouth and all sorts of stuff.
That's so BFM.
Yeah, it was so BFM, man, and it was just like, he came up and he saw the poster and he looked at it and he just cracked up laughing. I thought, you are awesome, and ended up interviewing him on the radio. Like, he was one of my heroes at the time, and still is. And then I got to hang out with him that night at Squid all night long, just up behind the bar and up in this back room, just hanging out with Jeff Buckley. And he was one of the nicest men I've ever met. And it was a great pleasure to have met him. But I'm going to play a song which I think a lot of people should hear, which I only really hear on BFM, which is him and Elizabeth Fraser from the Cocteau Twins. And it's a song called All Flowers in Time Bend Towards the Sun. And it's beautiful. And it's everything that makes music.
I'm singing. say that there's no one for you. But there is one. But there is one.
One day I'll look back and go, why did I spend so much time? I've been at this university for more than, three times more than most people are at university. You know, again, and you can't laugh.
Some of your producers, obviously they're a wonderful bunch of people to deal Should with you that early in the morning and have everything all lined up for you, and you've had a few.
I have had a few. I've had a few goodies. Steve Simpson, and who listeners will know is Natalie.
That's right.
Who's been a great mate and a great guy and was a great part of what I think the Breakfast Show was about initially. Gemma Gracewood, who's now in the Wellington Ukulele Orchestra. Renee Mundy, of course, who's also a great friend and I think was a fantastic producer at the time. Laura Holt was her production name.
Very
a very patient woman, but a really lovely girl. And Renee went over to to England. She's working for Associated Press over there. It sounds like she had the best job ever. And then, of course, Jose Barbosa, of course, was a keen young scamper there. He's become
back.
An integral part of the station now, isn't he? Yep. With Alia, of course, who's now in Wellington. Adam, of course, who was doing it recently, and now even the youngest of my producers, Vince, who's 18, and he's just into it for the right reasons. He's got no presumptions about the station, and he loves radio, you know, funny prick as well. Yeah. And he just goes like this: I just thought that'd be shit on the show. I just thought we wouldn't do that. Or I don't think we'll do that. Or I think here's what we'll do, and I go, okay, Vince. If there is a time I won't want to do it, it'll be not because I don't want to do BFM Breakfast, it'll be because I don't either feel like I'm in touch with the music anymore, or I don't want to get up at that time of the morning and I've got a better option, which I don't have either. But there's some pretty songs out there, and there's some stuff there's still songs that just blow my mind, you know. Okay, there we go, this is what we're going to play. Happy Palace. That song called Sweet Nothings by Happy Palace, which is a band out of Christchurch who were four of the most unlikely folk you'll ever see, who would just happen to be part of an MTV contest that I was judging, the very first MTV Kickstart contest. Absolutely mean song, and it's just, to this day, a guy who looks like he works, I don't want to put them down, but they just look like, they just don't look like the craziest, weirdest Christchurch group. But this guy looks like he could be the accounts guy from Bunnings. Lead singer, you know, and no offense, you know, because they're awesome, and but they just came out with a song, and it's just amazing. It's absolutely amazing, you know, and it's like songs like that, or coming across songs like the bands like Bon Iver, where you just go, wow, awesome, and that is just a whole new thing again. I'm completely addicted to the song, you know. If I didn't feel like that, and if I didn't feel like that I was in a position where I should play that music to people, then I wouldn't do it. I don't know. It's weird. Stuff like the Big Day Out now, and then you hear, you know, the telethon this year was called the Big Night In or whatever. It's just like you've just caught, you know, it's like stuff that was just the seed, you know, stuff like, you know, Henry Rollins was a BFM guy who played at the Glue Pot, you know, and gave our old accountant shit when he's down the front. He's now a major player on dramas on TV. Ice-T, you know, who I interviewed on the roof of Squid once, we smashed a window.
Now he's a special victims unit,
you know. It's like, what the hell's going on, man? And, you know, Perry Farrell's like a, you know, like you say, an old smacky who was just in charge of this great band, who somehow has become the dictator of everything great and interesting in modern music. And, well, you know, just some people won't agree with that, but you know, those people are heavy hitters now. You know, Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins, you know, when he came up here and sat down and afforded BFM a bit of time when he was here by himself and he was doing a solo tour, I thought that was really cool, man, because it was like he knew that we're the place. You know, when the Pixies come and play Vector Arena next year, that's going to be mental. One of the most, for me, I guess, Kings of Leon was really interesting, watching that too, watching Kings of Leon go from a band that, you know, my friend Oliver played me them, and I was like, shit, I've heard of them. Now let me hear, well, this is great. And we're playing them on BFM. We're really pushing them on BFM. Played their album 3 months before we were supposed to play and got into a bit of trouble for that, you know. And then that album went to number one straight away. And it's like, oh, it wouldn't be for any other reason, would it? You know. And then, you know, I just went to the last Kings of Leon show, which was super sold out, and just watching half of Auckland just loving them and just going, how, you know, Pearl Jam coming out this year, it's going to be huge. But it was on BFM where Pearl Jam started their whole thing, you know. And I think that, you know, we maybe don't get the kudos we deserve in that respect, but you know, I'd never thought I would have seen Nine Inch Nails play at the Vector Arena. You know, I never thought I'd see the Chemical Brothers play Vector Arena. Pearl Jam are going to play Mount Smart Stadium, aren't they? It's going to be huge. So it's like, you know, it's the greatest place because the people that are here, A, love radio and they love music, and some of them are dicks, and you're going to hate some of them and you're going to love some of them, and some of them should stick around longer, and some of them, you know, weren't here long enough, but you know, and some of us should probably move on. But at the same time, this is what we do, and there's one thing, that there's no one up here doing it because they think it's a job, and because they just need the job, you know. And that's I think that's really important. You taint BFM, you know, at your own risk. You know, and there's a few, I can think of a few people that have, and you know, see you later.
Yeah, well,
later. We're doing BFM. You go and do what you were doing, dick. I can remember when we had our 30th. We was like, hey, and thinking, well, this will all be sold and turned into a hip hop station in this many years, you know. Yeah. Then, yeah, you know, right. But nah. It's I you know, I wonder how much. I wonder. It's up to Auckland. It's up to the listeners, really. You know what happens with BFM. You know, why don't you just shut up and become part of it? That's what I reckon. You know, anyone out there that's always thought they wanted to do a show or they want something to do with it, come up, hang out, and get involved. We do appreciate your feedback.
Mikey Havoc, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Dubhead. Thank you, BFM. Tell you what, let's make it a Chemical Brothers track, because A, there was that time when two people at BFM said to me, oh, this style of music will be dead in a year after their first album came out. And B, because of all the people that I've ever interviewed and had the pleasure of playing with, opened for them a couple of times, and have had quite good relations with them. Of all the people I've ever interviewed in the whole of rock and roll ever, in the history of time ever, of all the people in radio and TV I've ever interviewed, the Chemical Brothers were, without a doubt, the loveliest guys.
It began in Africa.
Do it. Hit it. Yeah, cool.
It began in Africa. Thank you.
You have been listening to the BFM Historical Society, a radio documentary series made to commemorate BFM's 40th anniversary. The Historical Society is broadcast every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. and is available later on in the week from BFM's website as a podcast. The BFM Historical Society is produced at BFM by Duffed.